welcome to The Big Fight. I'm Nidhi Razdan. Here we are just hours away from the budget with all eyes on Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman and whether she can announce measures to boost the economy. On the eve of the budget, the government presented its economic survey on Friday, pegging GDP growth at 5% for this fiscal year, which is a sharp decline of the 7% they had predicted last year. But the chief economic adviser says that growth will pick up in the next financial year, ending in March 2021, going up to 6 to 6.5%. Let's take a look at some of the other highlights, though, of the economic survey today. Now, here's what else it says, and this is something actually that the CAA talked about. He said that from 1 AD to Thalinomics to reforms, he's covered all of these things, and if you want to know what they mean, then just listen to what we have to say. Firstly, the economic advisor says that the government has to use its strong mandate to deliver expeditiously on reforms. So that's one. That it is essential to simplify and to maintain business-friendly regulatory environment in the country, that an urgent priority has to be given to revive growth, so the fiscal target may have to be relaxed in the current year. That's quite important. We'll be talking about that. That indirect tax collections have been muted from April to November last year, and that India has been a dominant economic power for over three-fourths of the world's economic history since 1 AD. Yes, that is what the chief economic advisor said. He also spoke about Thalinomics in the survey, saying that the absolute prices of a vegetable thali have decreased since 2015-16, although prices increased during 2019-2020. Let's listen to what he said.
This chart shows that for close to three-quarters of recorded economic history, India has been the dominant economic power in the world. So this chart goes from 1 AD to 2017. Obviously, the first 1,000 years are actually not up to scale. 1-2,000 is being shown in a smaller, you know, period on the x-axis. Such dominance does not happen by mere chance. Such dominance happens by design. And what is that element of design? It is indeed our emphasis on wealth.
Well, joining us on The Big Fight tonight, let me take opening comments from all our panelists, beginning with Dr. Jayati Ghosh, Professor of Economics at JNU. Your thoughts, ma'am, on what you just heard and what your expectations are from the Finance Minister in the first minute, your opening comments.
Well, what I've just heard, I really don't have any comments on. Let's focus on what I'm hoping would happen and what I expect would happen, which are unfortunately two different things. I am hoping that this budget actually allows for an increase in public expenditure in areas that have very high multiplier effects. So specifically that would generate more employment, such as rural development, the employment guarantee scheme, health, education, similar kinds of areas. I would really hope that there is a major emphasis on increasing public spending in these because we desperately need a revival of demand in the economy, and that's the best way to get it done quickly. What I expect will happen is unfortunately not that. I'm expecting exaggerated estimates of both revenue and expenditure for the current year, which will probably turn out not to be realized, and estimates for the forthcoming year probably which will actually not focus on employment generation, but will focus on trying to make it business-friendly.
You see a clear difference between what you hope and what you think will actually happen. Standing with you is Supriya Srinath. She's a national spokesperson for the Congress Party, a former journalist who's covered the economy closely for many, many years. Supriya, your opening thoughts today, firstly on what you just heard.
So thank you for having me here. And I think first up, as far as the survey is concerned, it seems to be an exercise done which is absolutely divorced from economic reality. The survey talks about wealth creation and trust and very conspicuously misses how big inequality is in our country. It misses the reports, it misses the numbers that 1% of Indians actually occupy 42% of the national wealth. It misses the fact that trust deficit is at perhaps at an all-time high, and it is perhaps only best mirrored in fiscal deficit. There are two big things that the survey has done today. It has paved the way for a higher fiscal deficit to be announced by Ms. Sitharaman tomorrow because it talks about fiscal slippage and gives excuses. It also talks about attacking food subsidy and in some sense attacking India's poor. And the Thalinomics that you referred to earlier is once again divorced from reality because this prescriptive policy survey should have spoken about how to tackle consumption, which is at multi-year lows. Instead, it is talking about Thalinomics and saying how food consumption in India is all right, which it isn't.
Your 1 minute is up. Interesting thoughts there, Rajat Sethi, who is an advisor to the Manipur Chief Minister, standing with you there. Rajat, your outlook, what does this survey tell you?
Well, two things stand out for me from this economic survey. One is a relative optimism that has been demonstrated through this survey. It says that we have bottomed out and we will move ahead with better prospects in the H2, which is the second half of the financial year, and in the coming financial years as well. The second thing is that this embracement of wealth creation as something which is also morally right is something which comes out as a breath of fresh air, because for a very, very long time, wealth creation has always been seen as something which is principally unethical. Here they have said that wealth creation through ethical means is something which will allow people to come out of the poverty and will be fruitful for the economy. And I think, largely speaking, a couple of things which could have been elaborated more would be around structural issues which the economy in general faces. It's a bipartisan issue, and I think the economic survey should have delved a little bit more deeper into that. And perhaps second thing would have been around the $1 trillion infrastructure spend that the Modi government is banking
on. Okay, important points there. Harish Damodaran is there with you, the Rural Affairs and Agriculture Editor with the Indian Express. Harish Damodaran, your first thoughts on the economic survey. Do you share the relative optimism? Did you see that as well, the way Rajat did?
See, as you yourself said, you know, they started off by saying 7% last July. And then from 7%, it comes down to 5%. So who's going to believe that there is going to be whatever 6.5 and 7% kind of a thing? See, there is a lot of, the problem is a lot with credibility. In fact, I found the most interesting chapter in the entire survey is the one, there's a full chapter where they try to say that no, GDP growth actually is not being underestimated. You know, and trying to say that, you know, because people are questioning the GDP numbers, that is in turn whatever causing, you know, it is dampening the investor sentiment. Whereas I think, I mean, it is better to come down to earth, you know. So I think there is a problem of credibility. And today the same CSO has revised downwards its growth, you know, for 2018-19 from 6.8 to 6.1%. So I think there is a serious problem with, you know, trying to acknowledge the problem. And if you read the survey, you just don't think that there's a problem at all. And there's a lot of homilies on wealth creation through, you know, invoking Kautilya, Tirukural, everybody.
We're going to talk about that too. Let me get Sanchita Mukherjee in. She's a senior private wealth manager. Sanchita, are you optimistic, hopeful, or still cautious when you look at what lies ahead?
Thank you so much, Nidhi, for this opportunity. I'd just like to start off saying that, you know, I'm here representing my own views as an individual. I do not represent any firm. Yes, very interesting times. The forthcoming budget tomorrow, we have seen a very sharp slowdown, economic slump that we have all spoken about over here. There's a lot of debate going on in the fiscal deficit numbers, how and when and how the government would be addressing the twin deficits and all of that. See, I'd like to bring about certain perspectives from the capital markets point of view, from being a capital markets person over here. Let's date back 1.5 years back, you know, the entire NBFC crisis that had happened. A massive crisis, then the government was in an election mode. I'm not getting into the politics of it, purely economical. The spending had slowed down. There was a huge liquidity tightening which had happened. And the last 6 months, we have witnessed the consumer demand slackening quite a bit. Now, if one were to look at it and look at the couple of high-frequency indicators in the economy right now, current times, I would like to correlate the two. So the GST...
Okay, your 1 minute is up, so you may want to correlate that a little later.
Sure.
So that's just to get an overview of what you think. So let's take what all of you have said and just break that down. And Jayati Ghosh, I'll start with you and talk about Harish Damodaran's point of a problem of credibility. Now, that is very important because when last year's budget happened, a couple of months later, many of the things that were announced were actually rolled back. They all unraveled because, you know, they were unpopular, they had consequences. And then you have... the conflict over the GDP data itself. What do you think of the fact that the GDP data today also has been revised for last year from 6.8 to 6.1%? That's quite a drop.
Yes, and I think Harish is absolutely right about the loss of credibility. And it's more serious than just the GDP data. It even extends to the budget estimates. Because we now know that the budget that was presented in July knowingly gave false numbers on revenue and expenditure. And we're going to get the final actual correct numbers for the previous year now. So, in fact, we're dealing in a no man's kind of a previously un, unanticipated situation where you cannot trust any of the numbers coming out. And I think that's alarming. We do know all the other indicators are telling us that, yes, there's a massive slowdown, that, yes, nominal growth has actually fallen well below targeted growth. That is bound to affect your revenues. That, in turn, is going to affect your ability to spend. So we know that there's a tight spot that the government is in. How much of it is going to recognize and how much of it is going to declare are actually still open questions.
Rajit, you raised your hand. You don't see that there is a question mark on the credibility of our numbers.
I mean, see, you would require published, peer-reviewed published papers to get into what exactly the numbers are, where are the mistakes, etc. So that's an academic debate. But going into, CSO revising his estimate, I mean, these are structures which are meant to, and they constantly, they've been revising the estimates based on what new data comes in, how they're tabulating the data, etc. It takes time. Everything is an approximation when the number comes in the current fiscal year. So I think this should not be much of a concern because we've seen historically n number of times CSOs revise estimates when they come out with the final numbers.
But what about the economic survey? Last year the economic survey said that this year's growth would be 7%.
Right.
And now it's sharply downwards to 5%.
So that's again a projection. So do you think that projections always come
true? If they're saying 6.5 for next year,
right.
I'm not an expert. But I'm just wondering, can I believe this number?
If heavens fall tomorrow, you were talking about the coronavirus as well, just a while back, and you were saying that coronavirus has really impacted Chinese economy. Now, you see, China didn't project this and like keep it into its projection that some coronavirus
will
hit.
Do we have a coronavirus-like situation here?
All of these outlier events can change your projections. And there were considerable outlier events which happened in the last financial year as well.
Okay, Supriya.
So I am glad you say that there were considerable outlier events because the government seems to be in denial about those outlier events, whether it is the fiscal situation, whether it's the tax collection. I mean, let's put things in perspective. For the first time in 20 years, direct tax collections have slipped. What does it tell you? Wages have gone down and jobs have been eroded. And to the other point that was being made about the CSO data, the nominal GDP was targeted at 12%. We are going to end up at 7.5%. Tax growth of 16-17%, we will end up at 7.8%. So, I mean, I understand outlier events, but some amount of projection and some amount of smart data has to go into these projections. Are you telling me that the entire budget-making team gets it wrong every time and the economic survey gets its projections wrong by 2 percentage points? I mean, this is then serious issue to deal with, and which is perhaps why, for the first time, the credibility of our data is being questioned. It has never been done before.
Rajat, before I come to you, Sanchita had wanted to, I think, make a point on what was being said here about the data.
I just clearly wanted to talk about certain high-frequency indicators in the economy as we stand.
What do you feel about the credibility of the data?
So when we are looking at this entire situation of the slowdown and all of that, there's so much that you can read into the numbers. So when you're talking about the credibility of numbers, let's understand, I don't disagree with any of you, let's understand what are the ground realities. Now, GST collection numbers have been very buoyant last 2 months. In fact, January, it's projected to be close to around 1.13 lakh crore, right? Auto sales number, which were really dismal the entire last year because of various inventory issues as well along with demand, have actually plateaued out. We see a lot of sectors like specialty chemicals, sugar industry, cement pricing, volumes are actually showing green shoots of profitability. These are all reflective of the Indian economy.
So are
when
you saying you think the worst
NBFCs,
is over?
In fact,
are you saying
a
the worst
lot of
is over?
NBFCs have actually run down their books. There's a lot of consolidation which is happening in larger sectors. PSU banks consolidation, private sector lenders consolidating. So credit cycle, I believe, would actually offtake in the second half of this year, which makes it a credible assumption to understand that the economy might be headed towards better times with credit situation improving, with demand and revitalization of the economy.
So let me get Harish
credit
on that.
Growth was at 7.1% in December, down from 12.9% in April. In a matter of 8 months, it crashed from 13%
Harish
to
Damodran.
7%.
Yeah. See, I think where we are underestimating is the informal sector.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
the MSMEs, agriculture, and all these things. And these are underrepresented in the CSO data. Okay, so what happened is in 2017-18, after demonetization, after GST, etc., the listed companies did well. okay, because they improved their market share and probably at the expense of the informal enterprises, the small unbranded players. Okay, so that created an impression that, you know, the economy is doing well and all these things. But what we fail to realize is that it is the informal economy that accounts for a bulk of our employment. You know, so when you have job losses there, obviously it's going to have an impact on incomes, on spending, and I think that is what is being played out. I think this whole thing about slowdown, it came into the front pages only when listed companies started doing badly. You know, when we saw sales by Britannia also falling, by Hero falling, two wheelers, you know, these kind of things. Whereas
when you saw rural demand going down.
So I think, you know, rural and this thing construction, see, till these things revive, I don't see all these things. We have very clear evidence of construction going up, real estate going up, agriculture going up. Agriculture prices, by the way, are improving now.
Green shoots that he was talking about, just now the 8 core sector industries growth rate also came out. It is 1.3%. So after a slipping for past 2-3 months, it has finally started growing. So you're seeing that there are considerable, and there are, if you look at the IMA think tank, the business positivity outlook has for the first time went into the positive domain. So if you triangulate all of these information, it does look like the bottom is well past us and we are heading towards
and that
a much more...
hopefully the only way to go is up. But what did the chief economic advisor mean to say when he's talking about India's dominance as an economic power since 1 AD? What did you think of that, Rajat? I'm just curious.
In economic surveys, and I was just looking at the past 20 years of surveys, they come out with certain innovative facts to put forth. I mean, there was talking about these unwanted girl births last year. There were 21 extra girls just born because of the want of a boy being born in the family. So they do these projections just to make the economic survey much more exciting. And
well, it's
for
made
the,
our show more interesting.
These data are important points. I mean, we have seen these data being represented in various formats through research papers. There are physical papers which have been written on this, looking at the history of the economic...
So I think historical reference is very good, but that historical reference seems to gloss over the fact that there were barriers to wealth even in ancient India. There were barriers to equality even in ancient India, and those were even worse because they were caste based. So why does we can't gloss over parts of our history to say that we were this world power which we no longer seem to be?
Jyoti.
Well, you know, to be honest, I would have hoped that the economic survey wouldn't obsess about the first millennia onwards. Exactly. You know, I mean, it's a bit depressing that too many of the policymakers are really obsessed with the very, very distant past and how good we were in science, and apparently we also dominated the world economy and so on and so forth, rather than what is happening today. And I think today's economic problems are genuinely very serious. They require an acceptance that they're serious and immediate action to do something about it. It may be that there are green shoots in some particular sectors, but we do know that overall demand is deeply depressed. Employment is actually negative. And it's not just women, it's now across sectors.
So let me take a couple of individual issues and look at them. And first, what Rajat talked about, wealth creation, because that was important. And that, Sanchita, was a highlight of this economic survey as well. This embracing of wealth creation. Hasn't part of the problem been that even this government has not embraced those who've created wealth? And the government has looked at businesses with a great deal of suspicion, you know, unleashed the tax hounds on people. Do you see that changing?
Yes. Right now, if you were to look at business sentiments, they are a little on the negative side. And I think the government can do much more in addressing the business sentiments through the budget, clearly specifying that we are there for the businessmen of this country. But I think there are certain reforms like the corporate tax rate cut went, again, a very long way. A lot of people would debate it helped the listed companies and the bigger companies. I would think not. I think the impact of that would be 2 years hence. It's not an immediate impact like putting money in people's pockets directly like a direct tax cut would. But having said that, corporate tax rate cuts, let's assume, whom does it really benefit? A lot of mid, small, micro caps are also benefiting from this tax rate cut. A lot of startups, India has been projected to be the third largest nation in the world.
My question is different. My question is whether you think the government is out of this suspicious mindset of those who profit. You know, there's still that mindset to, like I said, unleash tax terrorism on that. And I'm not saying this. Industry voices are saying this. So Has that mindset changed? Do you really think
that? Not really. I don't think that the industry believes in that situation. I think the industry and the markets believe that the Indian economy, in a very pragmatic, in a very realistic, in a practical note, they feel that this slowdown which has happened, it's not a government intent. It has been driven by structural and cyclical issues. I completely agree with Dr. Jyoti. There's much more that the government can do at this point in time. A lot of action on the economy. But I don't think the government has unleashed a tax terrorism on businessmen as such. In fact, the government, to quote them, has actually addressed a couple of tax issues for businessmen in terms of trying to make IT tribunals clearer, working on
has
that.
Has it
effect.
Been enough, Supriya?
You know, I have just one thing to say, and I'm wearing my former economic journalist hat here. I'm in touch with a lot of the economists I used to track previously. What they tell you on camera and what they tell you off it are two different stories.
Well, we know, because tomorrow the budget will be
yes,
11
exactly.
out of 10.
So, you know, they are very worried. They are very worried about the activism. And I'm using this word very responsibly, quote unquote, from an ED or a CBI or an income tax department. I mean, we are living in a country where one of the a founder of a really large startup like Cafe Coffee Day committed suicide, and he blamed tax terror for it. He blamed harassment at the hands of tax man. And you look at industry after industry. I was speaking to an extremely important industry player in his power business. The total generation is X, and he's got an income tax notice for 10 times of that. How is he going to ever pay up? So these are the kind of times we are living in. People are extremely fearful to voice their candid opinion on the economy because you never know which agency tax you next. That's the word, and I'm quoting one of the most prominent industry men of our country. You never know which industry will land at my door if I begin speaking candidly.
Well, isn't that what happened in a way to Rahul Bajaj, Rajat? That when he did speak about criticism,
political statements.
It's not a political statement.
No,
he's not a politician. He's been as critical of Congress of the Congress government. I'm saying he was as critical of the UPA and its economy, but. You know, the way he got hounded online, for example, within hours.
No. Again, let me not get into the political debate. This is an economy debate, and let's.
No, it's not a political debate. Rahul Bajaj is not a politician.
So there was a very important fact that was mentioned in the today's presentation by the chief economic advisor. He also said that all the companies which took, because of the nexus with the Congress governments of the day, they took heavy loans from the banks whose fundamental business structures could not support. And they are they are the same companies who have added very little to the growth story of India. They have been principally responsible for the entire NPA, NBFC mess in this country. So that also alludes, and therefore building up, I mean, you can't keep cribbing about what happened during the Congress regime, because we all know that the economy went straight down the gutters during that time, but we cannot...
That's a very strong statement,
sir. No, that is pretty true. You were talking about political.
Yeah. You wanted to stay away from politics?
No, but I'm saying
then
so.
Let's
that's
not get political
so
on this.
Just to finish my point, I was steering
to
away
use
from
the word
the political
gutter
debate,
is very apolitical.
No, but I had to aim and respond to your political statement first. So
respond
what
on
we
the
need
substance
to
of what I said
what
and not about
to understand
gutter.
Is what the economic survey also talks about is that the invisible hands of market have to be strengthened through trust. That's the only way in which these hands would be strengthened. Otherwise, wealth creation without implicit trust in the society
another interesting point. I want to ask Harish Damodaran about this, because, you know, again, when you see bank officials being then jailed or indicted for giving loans to companies. Now, you know, that's another sort of a chicken and egg situation. Or bureaucrats. You know, so what does that bode then, you know, in terms of wanting to lend for new businesses, etc.? I mean, that also sends out a very worrying signal, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you do have to clean up the banking system. I'm not saying you don't, but is it sort of going the other way?
See, actually, if you see the last, say, 7-8 years, how many new entrepreneurs can you think of? See, apart from, say, a Baba Ramdev or maybe a Flipkart, you know, all these guys who are in this business of e-commerce, this kind of a thing. There are no new entrepreneurs coming in. Whereas if you look at the earlier post-liberalization period, there were a lot of new entrepreneurs who came across all fields, not just IT and all these things, even in things like textiles and all. So I think basically there is a serious crisis today in private capital today. You know, the private capital, for whatever the reason, they are just not investing. You know, and I think this survey is probably it follows from what Narendra Modi gave in his Independence Day speech. You know, where he extolled wealth. creators, saying that they need not fear, you know, they should not be looked at suspiciously, that kind of a thing. So I think it's more a sort of a reaching out exercise. But it's a very serious concern that we are not finding new yeah. entrepreneurs. The supply of new entrepreneurs has come down, and that is a crisis. So it is going to take time, you know, unless you have risk takers, people who are willing to put their money, and bankers who are willing to lend. So to that extent, definitely fear in the system. Fear in the system is a concern.
I just have Mr. Chandrajit Banerjee. I just have Mr. Chandrajit Banerjee, the Director General of the CII, with us for 5 minutes because he has to leave. He's joining us this evening. Mr. Banerjee, what did you think of the fact that the economic survey has revised its GDP target now for this year to 5%, down 2% from what it had earlier projected, and even the growth for last year from 6.8% to 6.1% now?
Yeah, I think one of the things which I think the economic survey has been pretty reasonably optimistic, if one can say, towards the growth figures that one has really talked about. And it is also suggesting that we have the worst is over, and that one sees sort of green shoots around. But I think what really needs to be seen is the number of, thoughts that it has really talked about, whether we see how much of it will get carried out in the budget in terms of both reforms, in terms of also seeing the type of space that one sees, the types of it talks about wealth creation and the partnership, the trust, that component of it has pretty much come in, the market forces. All of that would need to be seen as to how it comes out in the budget. We hope that the budget would reflect quite a bit of what has really come out in the economic survey, which would then be able to hopefully realize the type of triggers or the type of targets that the economic survey has really talked about
now,
in terms of the
growth. Now you're saying that the economic survey is optimistic, but are you optimistic? Are you saying that the health of the economy is okay, that it's going to be okay? Do you genuinely believe that?
The health of the economy, I would imagine that going forward, we should see that we have bottomed out, number one. Number two, we would also expect to see that the budget does create those parameters which would help us really get into a growth trajectory, which is indeed critically required. And that's very, very important. We need to see the type of space on the fiscal side, the type of government spending that would need to continue, the type of ease of doing business, which is very, very critical. So there are a number of factors which are required, and we would like to see quite a bit of them coming in this very, very important critical budget which comes tomorrow. And I think that on that, and I'm sure that the government would really look at that very, very seriously.
What are the two
there are
most
lots
important
of recommendations which have been given.
What are the two most important things that you would, if you had a wish list for the finance minister tonight, what would that be? What are the two things you really want to see in this budget?
No, I would think that there is, with a lot of care, we would need to see how the fiscal is utilized. We would really need to see a clear case of more government spending on the infrastructure and related sectors. We would like to see a huge focus coming on the budget on jobs, and I think that's very, very critical. It has to be a job-oriented budget, which can come from critical intervention on creating demand. And I think it's extremely important. If you really take to ask me about these two, one is the economic tool that it can give, and an overall focus on creating jobs, which is at this point in time extremely important. And if you really look at the economic survey, I think that also comes out very, very clearly, that creating jobs and enabling environment of creating jobs is going to be most important.
All right. Well, Mr. Banerjee, thank you for that and for going into those specifics as well. We'll see you tomorrow after the budget. And thanks very much for joining us. In fact, Jayati Ghosh, a lot of what he was saying is what you actually said at the beginning on the need to spend more on infrastructure, to focus on jobs. And this is something I want to ask everyone. Given the concerns about the fiscal deficit. Many have argued that the government should not, you know, be worrying about the fiscal deficit target so much. They need to spend more. Mm-hmm. You would say that should
absolutely. Stack? This yeah. is a situation of depressed demand. The government is currently the only agency that is actually able to increase demand. Private investment is not going up. Households don't have money to spend. Agriculture is in a decline. You really need public spending. You absolutely have to have it. So I completely concur with that. I just want to make one point about trust and all of that which was going on here. You know, you can't set targets for the Central Board of Direct Taxes and tell them go out and collect so much lakh crores every month and you are free to do what you like, and then say that there's no tax terrorism, because it's going to happen on the ground whether you like it or not.
Yeah, sorry, Rajat, do you want to answer that question on tax
terrorism? Well, I was really shocked and surprised to what you said, which was mostly a subjective statement that you stated that, see, we have not seen any startups coming in. Any data that you could quote? Because I have 1,000 data points which I can quote. In 2018... The venture
total
capital...
Total investment is down.
Yeah,
okay,
let me...
Total investment is
no,
down.
No, let me finish this point. Because he talked about startups, that you haven't heard any startup story. Perhaps you stopped reading newspapers ever since Congress lost the government. See,
no,
I can no,
Nidhi,
I can tell you, there is Oyo, there is Ola, there is Paytm, there is BlackBuck, there is Deliveries. Have you not heard about these companies? And let me give you an aggregate number as well.
What about outside e-commerce?
Venture capital and private equity growth has been 56% year over year.
He mentioned e-commerce.
It's been $40 billion in just half of the annual year.
And this statistic is from the economic survey last year. One second,
do you concur with this data point? What else is?
How many greenfield investments have come?
No, I mean, you talked about startups, and I can give you 1,000 names of startups which are really doing
well. I said new entrepreneurs are all in a very narrow sector.
These are all as
e-commerce.
Diverse as possible.
How no, diverse? How different is Flipkart from
mobility? Right, from electric mobility, mobility has been...
Rajat, I just want to quote from last year's economic survey. Last year, the chief economic advisor survey said that private investment is the key driver for demand. And then you had the CMIE data that came out for September, that new investments dropped to a 16-year low by 59% in September 2019, compared to the previous year.
I will give you another figure.
What we are talking are
investment numbers.
Things,
I will.
It was, how are they it was no. The point that was
the
raised
gross,
was not private not, investment. The
okay.
point that was raised
investment
was,
is tracked only by one statistic.
This
can I please come in?
I want to clarify.
Yeah, sure.
What I'm saying is, in the first, say, 20, 25 years after liberalization, you had new entrepreneurs in different sectors, you know, cement, sugar, steel, textiles, IT, pharma, everything. Whereas here, now what you are seeing is just in this particular sector.
There is only one.
No. Are you saying we don't need any cement plants? Are you saying we don't need agro processing?
Limited innovation which is happening in a cement plant. Period. There are lot more. Of course.
Okay.
There is only one statistic. At that point.
Okay,
that is true. There are much more newer areas of innovation.
May I go ahead?
Okay. No, ma'am, I haven't finished my point.
Okay, because you guys are going on.
No,
there is only one statistic that matters on investment.
One second. Supriya, can Supriya please be...
You're just hogging the discussion, you know. You have to let others speak.
I just made a point. Is there a rational counter to that?
You have
to let them speak. You have to let them speak to counter that.
I think the only statistic that matters on investment is gross fixed capital formation. That is at 28% of the GDP, which was at 38%, unless 41%. And unless that doesn't grow, growth will not pick up. We can keep debating. We can keep hyperventilating. Your investment rate has to go up for the growth to pick up. And one more point on what Mr. Banerjee was saying, a little lighthearted comment. I interviewed him in 2018 and 2019. He told me each time growth has bottomed out. That's what industry tells you on the record. But if this government is serious about reviving growth, they have to focus not just on jobs, which has to be point number one, but it has to focus on what Professor Ghosh is saying here. It has to focus on reviving consumption. It is 2/3 of our economy. You have given a corporate tax rate cut, which has accrued to a revenue loss of 1.5 lakh crore rupees. That money should have been given to people to revive demand, and that alone would put the virtuous cycle of consumption, growth and investment back in motion. There is no other way to look at Indian growth, because consumption is 2/3 of your economy. You ignore it at your peril.
Let me get Sanchita in on this issue of investment and how to drive it.
Getting the consumption cycle started, I agree with you, can be done in a couple of ways. A, direct tax cuts, putting more money into the hands of the people, spending much more on social schemes, MNREGA, Kisan Yojana, all of that, adding up to the rural consumption, a bottom-up approach to the economy.
The economic survey does talk about
the composition
cutting food and subsidies,
quality
though.
And direction and of government spending. So when we say the government needs to have a multiplier effect, infrastructure push, infrastructure spend, I need to understand the composition, the quality, and the direction and the execution of the government spending on the infrastructure. 100 trillion was allocated for the next 5 years. Hopefully, this budget would see 1/5 of that portion being allocated and executed in the next couple of months. Creating more jobs. When we are talking about creating more jobs, it's empirical that the government addresses this situation by looking at sectors which present, I would agree with Rajat, couple of $1 billion opportunities in India. Why aren't we looking at waste management? Why aren't we looking at scrappage industry for medium and heavy commercial vehicles? Why aren't we looking at water management? A very meaningful private, public, enterprise collaboration attracting PE inflows could all be a plan of the government in the budget. This is how you will create meaningful jobs in this economy.
Harish Damodaran, you were disagreeing with something that...
No. I don't disagree at all with her. What she said is correct about this 100 lakh. See, they should not talk these kind of figures, you know. If I were the government, I'll focus, say, on about 10 projects. 10 good projects. Dedicated freight corridor. Finish it. Delhi-Mumbai industrial corridor. Finish it. Go for about 10, 11. Don't give all these big numbers, you know. Go for it, you know, and have good execution capability. Where are the good public sector managers today? Where is a Varghese Kurian? Where is a U.S. Avasthi? Where is a, you know, you need those kind of people. So don't talk of, you know, big, big numbers. See, which again, you know, brings back this problem of credibility. See, when investors are no longer impressed by it. They want to see, like, for example, now there is a talk of this airport in Jewar. Get that done, you know, you handhold the investors, ensure that the land is acquired, ensure that it is done, focus on a few large projects. And the other thing which I believe which we should do is we should focus on rural incomes, you know. See, right now what is happening is now farm prices are slowly increasing, you know, at least they have bottomed out. Now, why don't you just say that from now on there will be no stocking controls, you know, there won't be export controls, you know, you have this thing, let prices increase, you know, when prices increase, if sugar prices go up by 5 rupees, you know, that is going to put in something like about 30,000 rupees into the hands of a sugarcane farmer, you know, that will get spent, you know, allow milk prices these things. So right now I think the green shoots is coming from agriculture. Prices are slightly rising, and this is the time, according to me, you can do away with a lot of these controls, you know, which were made in 1950s and 60s. You can play around with it and you will get investments there. And you must remember that the slowdown started in rural India. Yeah. And it can end only there.
Nidhi, so we have to get out of this mindset of direct tax pays. Because 2% of India pays direct taxes. You have to rationalize the indirect tax regime. Taxes have to be lowered there. If the respite comes in on direct taxes tomorrow, we welcome it wholeheartedly. But the focus has to be rationalization of the indirect tax regime, because that touches everyone. From the man on the street to the richest Indian, we pay the same rate of indirect taxes. Direct taxes is paid by a very small minority of people. Yes, they should get respite, but not at the cost of indirect taxes being rationalized.
Including those of us standing here. So if I had to get...
It will affect the sentiments.
I'm sure it will, but we have to look at beyond sentiment.
So I think one of the things is just to wrap, before we wrap up, and I think this is a point that Harish Damodaran was again making, that Rajat, is there too much of, with this government often, this obsession with headline management and, you know, with big numbers? It's actually true. Like, you know, let us have that $5 trillion economy by 2024. We set these sort of huge targets, put these numbers out there, they become political slogans. And is that part of the problem, that we need to step back from that and maybe take Harish's advice and look at fewer projects and do those well, rather than focusing on headline management?
I agree. I mean, fewer projects. Fewer means 10 or 100 is a subjective thing. And I think the government did agree to that there are certain important infrastructure-related projects whom we need to, like, give a full push with whatever needs in terms of being creative about getting capital investments coming into these projects. So I think that focus is definitely there. And talking about the big numbers, for any corporate or any organization, it's always these quarterly, when the quarterly or yearly time when the CEO comes in and tries to give a big horizon view of things. That's essentially what the leader can do, is to get everybody together that, yes, we are, in spite of all the differences in opinion that we have, here is the grand target that we are all collectively looking up to. And in order to do that, you set stretched goals so that you can actually drive the momentum, drive the push, and the morale of everybody around to actually achieve those.
Okay. So is it a morale-driving exercise?
You know, if it is, then it's a very risky one, because then it leads to what Harish was talking about. You actually then get a real credibility problem, and people stop believing you after a while. And I'm afraid that's what's happened.
But the $5 trillion thing ain't going to happen, right?
So right, not doubling by 2024.
You need to have, what, 9% every year?
The most important thing about the $5 trillion economy is that the chief economic advisor was asked this question, that will you reset the target? And he said, no, we will get to $5 trillion by 2024. You are growing at 4.5%. To get to $5 trillion, you have to grow at 9% each year from here on. Your investment rate has to be 38%. It's good. I agree with Rajat. It's good to target, you know, set high targets. But then you have to put all your might and credibility to achieve that. You're growing at 4.5% and your chief economic advisor and every minister in your government says, no, we will achieve it by 2024. You may not believe data. You may not go by data. But data will be required. Statistics will be required to get to $5 trillion. And to me, that's nauseating, if you ask me.
So before we listen to what Nirmala Sitharaman has to say, Sanchita, last word from everyone. Do you think a lot of the criticism that the finance minister has been getting, has that been fair? Especially in a government that's so over-centralized as this one, where frankly all the decisions come from the prime minister's office. And I'm talking about just the handling of the economy.
Yeah, sure. So I will not make any comment which is political and subjective in nature. My wish list to Nirmala Sitharaman, respectfully, is if she could kindly remove the long-term capital gains tax, that would be really helpful for the capital markets and the equity markets at large, because I don't think the government benefited much in their coffers by introducing it in 2018. Since then, the capital markets have just corrected, and I think it will go a long way in ensuring that there's a wholehearted retail participation in the equity market, which is the need of the hour at this point in time. Because we are looking at greater financialization of capital markets, debt markets, increasing the debt markets. This will go a long way into boosting sentiments.
On the question on Nirmala Sitharaman.
You know, I would disagree with that one, because there is no evidence that greater financialization of the capital markets actually gives you more investment. And that's what we need. We need more investment, we need more consumption, we need more employment generation. In terms of, is it her fault? I say no. I say it is a very centralized government. We all know who makes the decisions. And it's wrong to actually attribute all the blame to the finance minister.
Supriya?
I will second that. And I will be a little sympathetic to Ms. Sitharaman. And only because when the prime minister meets top 10 industrialists of the country, she is conspicuous by her absence, because she is meeting BJP karyakartas. Niti Aayog is calling for a budget meeting. She is conspicuous by her absence, but other ministers are present there. How then do you only blame her? Because this is the PMO show, so to say. And one more point on credibility. The Prime Minister meets top 10 industrialists 10 days before the budget. We all know the budget goes into printing a week in advance. Could any of the suggestions have been taken? Was this just a tea party? Was this an eyewash? What was it? And which is why I say the blame lies, if it is a centralized government like we can see it is, it lies at the doorstep of the PMO.
Rajat?
Well, largely speaking, I think this budget exercise is not business as usual. We would really want the growth to rebound in a much more stronger way. So I think there will be certain exceptional steps which the Honorable Finance Minister will have to take. And essentially,
Is she the one taking them?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, she has been roaming around the country, talking to every
She's not been in every pocket, in every region.
A lot of the key meetings, like the Niti Aayog meeting. In fact, Mr. Gadkari was there. Essentially, let me finish my point.
Piyush Goyal was there, but she wasn't there.
This is the concluding statement. Let me please finish my point, Nidhi. So what I expect is that would this budget, I mean, budget is not the time for structural reforms, but at least we will have to start from some good day. So I think some tough reforms will have to come into in order to really unleash the animal spirits, and this is the true time when and every such moment when you have crisis in terms of growth not reaching up, matching up the aspirations of the public at large, is the time when you can introduce tough reforms and see the benefits of it in the long
Harish Damodaran.
Three things. The first thing is no more shocks. Okay, you already had GST. You already had demonetization. Now you have CA, you know, people running around. We don't know, too much of uncertainty. In an uncertain environment, people won't spend, businesses won't invest, etc. Okay, so no more shocks. That's number one. Number two, I think let's recalibrate growth estimates. Don't give this 5 trillion and all these things. Aim for something lower. Don't go for too many projects, you know. And definitely don't come out with all these vanity projects. We don't need vanity projects. We need very clear this thing. According to me, dedicated freight corridor can be a real game changer in terms of increasing in India's competitiveness, etc. Number three, I think now the time has come to scrap the Essential Commodities Act as far as stocking of agri-produce is concerned, and with to do with export controls, etc. I think that will really help boost farm prices, and when farm prices go up, I think consumption will be back.
Well, thank you very much to all of you. I think you've all given some very interesting suggestions as well. We've not just ended up actually having a big fight, but actually talking about something constructive too. So thanks a lot. Let's see what the budget finally brings. Thanks for joining us. Good night.